Welcome to Under Lock and Key, news and commentary about prisons from the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League and the Maoist Internationalist Movement.
Massachusetts bans prisoners from voting, and the Illinois Department of Corrections misuses public funds.
The U.S. incarcerates a greater percentage of its population than any other country, sending more black men to prison than college. The purpose of this program is to educate about and inspire activism against the American lockdown.
Massachusetts bans prisoners from voting. On November 7th, by a 2-to-1 margin, Massachusetts voters stripped prisoners of the right to vote with a constitutional amendment. In America, only Maine and Vermont now allow prisoners to vote. This country leads the free world, standing as a pillar of democracy for all others to emulate, is made up of 47 states that prohibit prisoners from voting. 29 states also disenfranchise people on probation, and 32 states strip those on parole from voting. 14 states prohibit those with felony convictions from voting for life. MIM has nothing against the principle of disenfranchisement to steer societal development. We wrote, in MIM notes, that communists have always known that while there are violent contradictions in society, there must be dictatorship. Those who organize to kill others through starvation, war, toxic pollution, withholding medicine, clothes, or shelter, must be put down by force, including the use of prison. We get to that day when the profit system and its kin are nearly as universally loathed as the slave system is today, then we can all live without dictatorship. We at MIM point with pride to the months and years after the U.S. Civil War when some Southern slave owners lost their rights to vote and run for office. Republicans at the time understood that the slave owners would come back to power if they were left to organize for what they wanted. Today we benefit from that act of organized force against slave owners, and only a small portion of the world would think of supporting slavery. That is progress. The next step will be to do the same thing for those who profit from murder. Prisons are a form of organized violence, a form of dictatorship used by one class to suppress another. Where MIM would like to use prisons as part of the dictatorship of the international proletariat, the American prison system is part of the dictatorship of the imperialist bourgeoisie. In particular, American prisons are a tool of national oppression. Voting restrictions further stigmatize and exclude prisoners and ex-prisoners from participation in social life. America's criminal injustice system has grown exponentially in response to and in prevention of national liberation movements of the internal semi-colonies. Whites are still a substantial majority of U.S. citizens, but they are less than half of this country's prisoner population as the lockdown takes large numbers of oppressed nation men off of the streets. For the black nation, the bourgeois disenfranchisement laws mean that while 2% of all U.S. adult residents are banned by a felony conviction from voting, over 13% of black men are so disenfranchised. In Alabama and Florida, the rate is even higher, where over 31% of black adult men cannot vote. We were not able to find numbers for the Latino and First Nations. The Massachusetts Constitutional Amendment concludes a 3-year effort by Governor Salucci to retaliate against prisoners who formed a political action committee. In July 1998, the Massachusetts government discovered that Norfolk County prisoners had formed a political action committee, or PAC, to organize prisoners to vote and to lobby against the transfer of prisoners from Massachusetts to Texas and for other reforms in the prison system. The governor responded with Executive Order 399, prohibiting formation of the PAC and making possession of PAC materials punishable. Guards tossed organizers' cells for PAC literature. The electoral ban passed the state legislature twice with high margins and then was sent to the voters. Salucci could not have been worried about the prisoners' PAC's levels of direct influence. In 1999, the AFSCME union spent $2.8 million in soft money on the Democrats, and Philip Morris gave $2.9 million to Republicans. The total raised by the Massachusetts Prisoner PAC, $243. The problem for Salucci was the dangerous example of prisoners organizing to fight for their interests. As frequent listeners to this Under Lock and Key program will know, prisons in America operate in frequent violation of their own rules and with direct disregard for the supposed mission of correction or rehabilitation. So any activism for their own rights that attracts the attention from the outside world is a threat to the state's authority within the prisons. We agree with the PAC founder that prisons should be as integrated with the outside as possible. Prisoners in Maoist China were encouraged first to study and understand how their crimes had affected the people. On successful study, they were given productive work, while to occupy their time and to develop an understanding that they could contribute to building socialism in a positive way. Ultimately, reforming their thinking included tours around factories and communes to understand how a socialist economy relies principally on the energetic contributions of its people. Such interaction prepared prisoners to participate in society when their sentences had been completed. Mim supports use of such a prison system under the dictatorship of the proletariat as a means of uniting even former militarists and bankers in the work of developing a society that recognizes all people's right to live. But Governor Sallucci and his prison system have no interest in helping prisoners return to society, or in building a society that treats all people equally within the law. So while we agree with the PAC founders on the importance of involving prisoners in politics, we lead prisoners in revolutionary politics and away from the politics of the bourgeoisie. The armed might of American imperialism supports the theft of super profits from the Third World and locks U.S. borders tightly to secure that booty. This is a systemic problem, not something we're going to be changing at the American ballot box. Mumia Abu-Jamal is a former Black Panther on death row. He was framed for the righteous killing of a police officer engaged in an act of police brutality. He was sentenced to death in 1982 after a bogus trial. His appeals are now in the much quicker federal courts, and an execution could happen very soon. Prior to his arrest, Mumia was a radio journalist who exposed police brutality. From within the walls, through books, articles, and radio commentaries, Mumia continues to be an outspoken leader of the oppressed. With Mumia's access to the media limited, we recorded one of his essays to bring it to a wider audience. See for yourself the real reason why the state of Pennsylvania wants to kill Mumia Abu-Jamal.
The Folly of Calling the FBI by Mumia Abu-Jamal. When are you Black folks going to throw off the killers that are jailing you for murder? John Africa, On the Move, July 26, 1975. When Black folks are beaten down by cops all around the United States, and when they are shot down in their cars, as in the cases of Dante Dawson of Philadelphia, or Malice Green of Detroit, or the beautiful young sister Tysha Miller, who was shot over 15 times in her car in Riverside, California recently, or we can go on and on. One of the first things that many Black leaders do is to announce that they are asking for the FBI to come in to solve the case. What such an announcement means, of course, is that they recognize that local police are in no position to meaningfully investigate such cases, as their interests are in protecting their own. But why the FBI? Such a call sounds strange when one considers that the FBI played a significant and an openly dangerous role in the history of African American struggles for freedom in America. And they were deadly enemies of such leaders as Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, Marcus M. Garvey, and of such groups as the Black Panther Party, RAM, SNCC, the Republic of New Africa, and the like. In truth, the history of the FBI shows that they have waged a secret war against Black America, and frankly, it seems kind of stupid to look to them for relief from other state forces who are waging a part of their long white supremacist war against Black folks. James Forman, the former head of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, after being beaten by white supremacists and Klansmen while demonstrating for civil rights throughout the South, constantly requested FBI protection from the violence. Instead, they would turn up every time that he was beaten, stand by, and take notes, never stopping any of the violence, but instead were involved in gathering dirty and derogatory personal information on civil rights workers. Forman finally concluded that the FBI was a part of the governmental structure and were, in effect, the enemy of Black people. Forman noted, We did not say it that way in 1963, but we did know that the FBI was a farce. It wasn't going to arrest any local racist who violated any and all laws on the statute books. Instead, it would play a game of taking notes and pictures. The files in Washington must have been growing thick even then, with documents from the civil rights movements and with photographs of us all, doing everything but screwing, and maybe even that. The former FBI chief, J. Edgar Hoover, found it intolerable that Negroes would want to be addressed as Mr. Scholar Kenneth O'Reilly writes that the job of the FBI was, in large part, to stifle black unity. Division 5 also worked to prevent the rise of a messiah, someone who could unify and electrify the militant black nationalist movement. Malcolm X had been the most likely candidate, but his assassination removed that threat. Malcolm was simply the martyr of the movement today. Muhammad was hardly a more viable threat because of his age. In the final analysis, Division 5 said, Stokely Carmichael and Martin Luther King were the only serious candidates. They both dreamed of becoming a messiah and had the necessary charisma. Not even head of domestic intelligence William C. Sullivan considered King to be a militant, but that was beside the point. King could be a very real contender for this position should he abandon his supposed obedience to white liberal doctrines, nonviolence, and embrace black nationalism. The role of history has taught us that the state has its interest and the people have another, and they do not coincide. Now, with much of the nationalist movement in pieces, with some aligned to the Democratic Party, some involved with community organizing, and others involved in other areas of social and cultural life, it is somewhat surreal to read of community calls for the FBI every time that a young person is murdered by cops. Since when are they the solution? The propaganda shown by the movie Mississippi Burning doesn't come close to showing the true role of the FBI. It's time folks acted as if they knew that. By Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Illinois Department of Corrections misuses public funds. Recently, in USA Today, there was an article that spoke about the misusage of funds by Director Snyder is using jets, cars, money, etc. for his and his staff's personal use. Yet Governor Ryan is still commending him on a job well done. Now Governor Ryan has incorporated into his scheme of things medical co-payment systems where the inmates have to pay $2 for non-emergency medical treatment. We're already being housed in unsanitary conditions and given the lowest quality of medicine and medical treatment. So where is all the money going? Heating and ventilation are worse than in an abandoned building. The way Menard and Springfield tell it, every cell house is run accordingly, and prisoners' grievances concerning treatment, heating, medical assistance and care, not forgetting the sanitation, are frivolous and without merit. We need to come together and unite to combat this plot to exploit the money and free labor from us. We don't stand as one. We will definitely fall together. This was a letter from an Illinois prisoner.
This has been Under Lock and Key, a revolutionary anti-imperialist league and Maoist internationalist movement program about prisons. For more information, contact RAIL, P.O. Box 712, Amherst, Massachusetts, 01004, or email radio@mim.org.